Well, good evening. We're back to our regular schedule. We finished our series, two series, as a matter of fact, back-to-back with the Mark Verkler series. Very, very good. Most of us really learned a lot, and we're grateful for it in terms of being quiet before the Lord, listening to Him, and actually have something come through our hearts from Him. But in terms of tonight, the name of the sermon is "Now What, God? I'm going to die out here." we so often feel that way when grief and struggles, you know, assail us, when it comes against us. So, but we have to be reminded that when we're overwhelmed, we really need to not look to those details. We need to concentrate on the greatness of God. And it's going to be the hardest thing we're going to have to learn, but practice makes perfect. We have to keep encouraging others and ourselves. You know, I teach what God has said in His Word, and yet I am still accountable before God. I am struggling with the same difficulties that each of us here that we face. Just because someone teaches doesn't mean they get special sugar spread on them, you know, making it life easier. So I wanted to read tonight, there's two books that we're going to be working on tonight, and one is Psalm 77, so if you want to open up to that and follow along, and the other is going to be Exodus 14. We've got some great things from that to encourage us. But I just wanted to read this. Psalm 77, starting with verse 7. And this is a real cry. I like this because it's sometimes what we feel. There's nothing wrong. I always say, if you're going to complain and whine to someone, do it to God, because He's the only one that will not leave us nor forsake us. He's the only one that will say, oh, I've heard this before, get out of my face. He's the only one to comfort us, the only one to lead us, the only one to guide us, the only one to help us in the changes that are so desperately needed in each one of us. And so as I read this, I go, yeah, Lord, I've called that out many times. So please, if we could learn anything tonight, it's not a sense of failure when you cry out to God that you're hurting. It is not, doesn't mean you don't love the Lord. Doesn't mean you're not saved. It just, we are in the human form with the Adam nature, and we are battling it, and we are winning this battle because we are crucifying our flesh, and we are letting the Spirit of God rule and reign more than ever before, and, God willing, less hindered. But when we've got to understand the immensity and the enormity of this battle. But the battle is not ours, God says, it's the Lord's. And we have to keep, remember, our strength in the battle comes from Him, our equipment in the battle comes from Him, our map in the battle comes from Him, our direction in the battle comes from Him, our resupply in the battle comes from Him. Everything comes from Him. But you don't get a free ride. And we just need to understand that. So in Psalm 77, starting with verse 7, I really hear this. The psalmist is crying out and says, will the Lord cast off forever? And will He be favorable no more? Oh my gosh, how many of us have cried that out? Have His mercy and loving kindness ceased forever? Have His promises ended for all time? Has God, this is the Amplified Bible, so it has a few extra little words in there. Psalm 77. Verse 7. I'm sorry, starting with verse 7. There we go. Yeah, that'll make it get off a little bit there. We're on verse 9. Has God deliberately abandoned or forgotten His graciousness? Has He in anger shut up His compassion? And then it says Selah. And that means pause and calmly think of that. When you hear that, Selah, it means pause. Calmly, not like me, hip-hopping all over the place. Oh, yeah, rah, 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 rah. Slow it down. There's times throughout the Scripture it says Selah, and that means wait on this. Sit on it. Meditate on it calmly before the Lord. He wants to tell us some things. And verse 10, and I say, this apparent desertion of Israel by God is my appointed lot and trial. But I will recall, and then I love this. He goes on. He says, all these things are bad. I think God has left me and abandoned me and all this. But I will recall the years of the right hand of the Most High in loving kindness extended toward us. For this is my grief, that the right hand of the Most High changes. But I will earnestly recall the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will earnestly remember the wonders you performed for our fathers of old. I will meditate upon all your works and consider all your mighty deeds. Your way, O God, is in the sanctuary, meaning in holiness, away from sin and guilt. Who is a great God like our God? Verse 14, you are the God who does wonders. You have demonstrated your power among the peoples. You have with your mighty arm redeemed your people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph. Selah, pause and calmly think on that. Whoa. He called out and said, God, where are you? Oh, gracious God, have you forgotten us? Will you desert us forever? And then it says, think on that now. And when he paused and he thought on that, what was his next stuff? I'm going to earnestly recall your deeds. I remember your mighty hand. You're a great God. You've demonstrated your love towards that. Wow. Now think on that. Which one's going to help you? Worrying about where things are, or actually talking about the greatness of God? Now, the absolute wonderful takeaway from tonight that we can concentrate on is really don't ever get caught up in the details of your circumstances. Get caught up in the greatness of God. Now, that's a shift for most of us. The details come at us fast and furious. There's all sorts of things. Extreme conditions can often happen. And sometimes it isn't just one thing. It's multiple things. I've often said, God, just give me one calamity at a time. I can handle it. And he goes, yeah, I know. Then it would be you handling it. You'd never learn to trust me. You'd be in your own strength, which is always lower level, which is always minimal before God in comparison to his superior ways. So embolden that in there. Don't get caught up in the details of the circumstance. Get caught up in the greatness of God. It doesn't mean you don't deal with the details. It means you deal with the greatness of God first. That clears you out. That gets rid of the clutter. That sends the adversary packing so he can't throw the fog, they call it the fog of war. Well, this is a battle, and he's in it too. And he wants doubt. He wants fear. He wants confusion. He wants anger. He wants all of these things assailing you in addition to the circumstance. You'll be so burdened, you're under enemy fire, you can't move. There will be no progress, but God says there's a way out. You concentrate on the greatness of God in those circumstances, and you are surrounded by his shield, by his power, by his strength, by his wisdom. Well, that's a good way. Hey, I'd rather be in a tank going through a field than out there by myself without any protection. You know what I'm saying? God is the tank of all tanks. Get inside. Get in that ark, so to speak, that ark of the covenant. Get in there with him. It doesn't mean you will not have a battle. It means that there's going to be less happen to you in the battle. So powerful. Now, in looking to the details of your extreme circumstances, instead of looking to the Lord first, what's going to happen? Well, what we just read in Psalm 77, the first part, he started looking at the details. And what did he come up with? Oh, God, you've left me. You've abandoned me. Will your hand go away forever? Bad things are going on. You can sing that song all you want. It will not help your circumstance. You'll get no tank. You'll get no ammo. You'll get no resupply. You'll get no wisdom. You'll get no direction. You just keep crying and crying and crying. Now, I guarantee you, misery loves company. You will attract those with just as much miserable counsel as what you're complaining about. You need the counsel of God. Now, sometimes my head talks to my head. I get nowhere. Your head talks to your head. Oh, I could do this. I could say that. Whoa, slow down that conversation. I don't want a meeting with myself. Adam nature, meeting with Adam nature, is only going to come up with Adam nature. I want the Spirit of God to intervene, to come forth, full force. What am I to do? I wait upon you, God. So powerful. So, and just a reminder, again, this is going to be the hard part, because the struggle, the details hit us. They're in front of us. They don't go away on some of the things on your extreme circumstances. But you have to calmly meditate on who God is and His greatness. Now, that's going to take some struggle there. That's going to take some practice. And don't beat yourself up if the second time something goes on, you don't get it all right either. It is a practicing situation. The nature of man is very powerful and strong in most of us, even some who have known the Lord for many years. The adversary is stronger than you, but we win because greater is He that is in you than he that's in the world. So we do have every single thing we need to get through this world and its calamities. Now, just an example, some extreme circumstances, and many of us have gone through this or have ministered to those who have, things like the death of a loved one. That's tough. That is really tough. The diagnosis of a dread disease. I mean, you know, no one likes to hear cancer. I had someone call me today, said, pray for me. The doctor said I might have cancer up in my eye area. Oh, I mean, just the thoughts. When she's telling me, I got 1,000 thoughts in my head of the eye coming out. And all, it could be something just simple as a cyst that is benign and is easily taken care of. Or it could be something more simple, like what if your whole eye socket has to be removed and some of the bone of your sinus? I mean, where's God then? Well, He's right where He's always been. And anyone, you, me, and that person, we can gather strength, we can gather comfort and say, God, I don't know what you're doing. I know what I vote for. I want that thing simple and off of me. But I'm sticking with you. This is a big part of the battle. This is a big IED that's gone off. But you have said that you're not going to leave me. And if you're going to use this for your glory more than my plain eye, then so be it. Wow. Now that's easy to say when it's not your eye. But as we stick with the Lord, as we look to His greatness in our circumstances, we too shall gather that and have those abilities. Things like divorce, things like adultery, loss of a job, loss of a home to a hurricane or a flood. I mean, we just went through Hurricane Isaac, and it was a tropical storm, but it turned into a hurricane. Pastor Mark, his son is in New Orleans. Have you heard from him yet, by the way?
Yeah, they're
okay.
Safe.
They're okay.
They don't have any power.
Oh, okay.
They're okay.
They're okay, good. So, I mean, there's all sorts of levels of circumstances and degrees of problems going on. What are you going to do? Are you going to look to those details? Well, how about the loss of a limb? Or like we said earlier about the eyesight. We so often shake a fist at God because He didn't, like, stop this extreme condition. I mean, we really do. We go, God, why don't you stop it? But I want you to stop and think now. If God is really in total control, which I know He is, and I know that most of those that are here and many listening know that too. If God is in total control, then your extreme circumstance is not extreme to Him. Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. I'm down here. You're up there. Okay, let's go on a little further. Just because things don't work according to your plan doesn't mean it wasn't His plan. Whoa, that's right, Lord. I suffered here. This thing was real. It happened to me, and it seems so weird and so strange and so wrong for you to allow that death, for you to allow that loss, for you to allow that job change, for you to allow that thing to happen. You already saw it before I even saw it. How come you let it go? Well, He has a plan. He doesn't plan for you to sin. He knows it's going to happen. And there's things He's going to prevent if He knows it's going to change His plan. There's things He'll prevent if it's too much for you to bear. But we're like children. Oh, I can't do 5 math problems. It's too hard. Everyone's going to say, I can't do that. It's too hard. That's too much for me to bear. And if you have a good teacher, you're going to say, honey, I know it's hard, but you got to go on. You got to be pressed. You got to be pushed. You got to do some more problems. You got to get good at it. You need more practice. God does the same thing. We always think what happens to us is more than we can bear. But because, now, if you don't know the Lord, none of this applies to you. Go out and do whatever you got to do. I'm talking about those who have given their heart to the Lord, asked Jesus Christ to come in, and actually don't just want a Savior to keep their fanny out of hell, but they actually are submitting to a God to ask Him to be Lord of their lives. I give you permission to come in. You stood at the door and knocked. I opened it. And there's two parts to that. I'm not going to get into that tonight, but I just want to remind us as we're speaking of this. There's two parts to that. I stand at the door and knock. He says, if you open it, you have to invite me in. Some people open the door to someone selling something, and what do? They close it again. People have heard about our great God. They have heard about who Jesus is. They have heard that he has paid for all of the capital crimes of sin of mankind. And those who not only open the door, that doesn't just count because you just close it or leave the entrance. You have to invite him in, and we have invited him in. And now he's doing reconstruction. He's tearing out all the junk that we either put in ourselves or someone else did. It hurts. It is painful. But he is building in you a humongously beautiful, glorious tabernacle of holiness. This is so very powerful. So it does hurt. Our extreme circumstances are controlled by God. And the devil will talk to you all day and all night and say, he left you. This is your fault. This is your problem. There is no way out. This can never be fixed. You will never stop hurting. Our own minds are going to be telling us this. And he is going to magnify it. You have to fight it. You have to reject those thoughts. You have to reject those feelings. You have to reject those things, that those thoughts are not from my God. My God does not press me down. He doesn't depress me. He doesn't tell me, you're never going to make it. God said, never will say this can't be done. Nothing is impossible to our God. Wow. Now that should give us some encouragement, but you got to what? Selah. Meditate on it. You got to calmly go before him and say, Lord, I want that to apply to me. So just because it didn't happen to work out the way we wanted to, just be careful. We don't think it's part of his plan. Because I know to the very core of my soul that he is in control, even when very complicated and difficult things happen, because he didn't prevent it or stop it, it means he's going to use it. We say, God, please use me. Even in our sin and in our weakness, as things come on, gee, I asked you to use me. Well, now I messed up. But now you're going to use me. Because of this thing, I am going to be able to be used. I'm going to see your greatness. You're going to work this through for me. Just be careful not to frame it up ahead of time what you think God's going to do. Because when he doesn't do what and how you think that, then you're going to be disappointed in God. Don't do that. Just say, God, I give this to you. Please help me not to have a vain imagination about how it's going to work and what the details are. I want to take it as it comes. Very, very, very difficult thing to do. And I want us to look at Exodus chapter 14. And in verse 1, it talks about the Lord speaking to Moses. And now, to set this up, the Israelites had just, I'm not going to read all of it, but I'm going to kind of go through some of those things. Exodus chapter 14, verses 1 and 2. And I'm just going to kind of give you a little synopsis of that. The Israelites had just left their bondage in Egypt. They were, you know, left, and they're out there traveling across, and God told them to go camp by the Red Sea. So that's where they stopped, you know, and they stopped there. Now, remember that God went through the 10 plagues before these guys were let go. So Pharaoh finally let them go. But remember now, even though the plagues were on Egypt, none of the plagues touched the Israelites. Oh, okay, God. I'm in the midst of bondage, but none of those horrible things happened to me. Yeah, I'm one of your children. Okay. Because God knew that would have been too much. Because the bondage was already bad enough for them. That was already a burden. And the plagues upon them also would have not done anything for them. It would have ruined them. And God will never do that in our lives. You see, we got to go back to the scriptures. This proves the point. He's not going to put more on you than you can bear. He knows what the amount of pain that's going to happen in these circumstances is going to do something if we let him. That's why we have to pray for one another. Some people are down and out. They really are inundated in their circumstances. And what we do, the easiest thing is to try and fix the circumstance. So we all run on that. Oh, I'll make you a pie, I'll paint your house, I'll babysit your kids, I'll do anything to relieve this pain. If that person is not hooked up to the Lord, that pain is only going to be deferred. All you are is a little anesthetic. You're Novocaine, honey. Because when you leave and it wears off, and they still got their problem, let God get involved. That's where the power of that prayer before God, that intercession with Him over these circumstances, is so, so important. Now, even though, it's another point for us to understand in terms of these extreme circumstances, even though they were out of bondage now, they were free, they're away from Egypt, guess what? Was it all settled for them? No. Everything was unknown. Where are we going to go? How long are we going to be here? How many days are we traveling before we camp? My gosh, that's big. And we're not talking about five people on a hiking trip here. We're talking about, what, 600,000 or 700,000 people and animals and gear and equipment. Oh my gosh. You can't even coordinate a family camping trip without stress. I mean, they were being led by God. I mean, that's where the power was. And even says later on, we're not talking about this tonight, but their shoes didn't wear out. My gosh. There's people that hike the Appalachian Trail. It's a couple thousand miles long. They go through 3 and 4 pairs of boots. They have to mail back home to get new boots because they wear it out on the rocks at all the distance that they travel. And that's only like 6 or 7 months out there. These guys were out how long? 40 years, and their shoes did not wear out. You see, we forget, we read it, we say it in Sunday school, yada, yada, we make a little poster on it when you're a kid. We're forgetting. Meditate on this stuff. This is big. I can do things that don't go by the natural, God says, and you keep only thinking in the natural. Oh, this can't work out. How am I going to get new shoes if I don't have any leather? What? If I kill the cow to make the shoes, I won't have the, you know, won't have someone to carry my stuff. You know, we think so limited. God is an out of the box thinking God. So powerful. Now, this is in this particular scripture here. God is saying that I want you to camp by the Red Sea. Well, did they know anything was happening? God already saw them back there in Egypt getting the chariots ready, getting their gear ready, getting all their stuff. They were going to go to war. He was sending his big Arnold Schwarzenegger guys out there. Or who's the latest strong man? I don't know. Arnold Schwarzenegger, kind of an old guy, but whatever. He's one of the older heroes. Yeah, Ted Marshall. He's one of our heroes. But anyways, see, God knew. Here's Pharaoh getting ready to annihilate these people, and it's just absolutely amazing. He's going to chase them down and destroy them. Well, guess what? In verse 3 and 4, Pharaoh goes on, and he says, he just happens to make a point, and he says, oh, they're wandering around. Oh, they're out there in the wilderness, no problem. And then God says, but I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart. He's going to give him a change of heart now. Before he let them go, now in verse 4 he says he's going to chase after them. And look what God says at the end of verse 4. Now, if you don't, I don't know about you, but I would think that would be a calamity. Here you have 600,000 men, women, children, horses and donkeys and all the rest, goats and all the rest of that stuff, which takes a long time to get one place unpacked and repacked. And Pharaoh is coming with all his chariots and fighters. He's got special forces here. These aren't a bunch of Gomer piles, you know. They're the toughest of the forces. They're coming to kill these Israelites and take back the spoil because they actually took gold and things. The Egyptians had no idea. There's like a coma came over them. Oh, here, take all this stuff. Just get out of here. They were responding, I'm sure, to the plagues. Oh, just get out of here. Take whatever you want. Get out of here. You're causing all these problems here in our country. But then they came to, after all this stuff went on, and God lifted all that stuff, so I'm going to harden his heart now. Now he's going to go after you guys, he's going to get you. So, you know, and God knew all this. So, absolutely powerful, but it says, at the end of verse 4, God says, I know all this stuff is happening, and I will be honored through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. Whoa. So here's this big fat calamity ready to happen. And it's absolutely powerful because God already knows it. He's setting this up so that he is going to be honored in these extreme circumstances. He's not only going to rescue the Israelites from their extreme circumstances. That's pretty extreme. I mean, some of this stuff is pretty big. God put a lot of details in here. Big circumstances. Here there are all these people. There's the Red Sea. We don't got one boat, honey. There isn't one tree that we can cut down. You got to make a raft for 600,000 people? You'd have to have how many Queen Elizabeth II cruise ships would you have to have? I mean, can they take 1,000? You're going to have 600 cruise ships show up in the Red Sea in order to get these people across? And then you got all these people, so they're dead in the water, so to speak, facing the water. There is no way to escape. It's water in front. It's called the Red Sea. It wasn't a little river. And then they have this massive, the Taliban is coming after them with everything they got, and they're going, oh my gosh. So God set up this extreme circumstance. Well, the Israelites didn't know that. They weren't thinking about him being in control. All they're knowing is, we are going to die. It's absolutely amazing. But what he's going to do is so powerful. Not only is the extreme circumstance going to be remedied, but he also uses that to show the heathen just who God is. Now in verse 5, he says, when the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, then he said, what have I done? Let's go. Let's go get them. You see, God had actually put a little fog over a little Pharaoh, and then when he comes to his senses, first of all, he said, oh, the Israelites, they're just out there dancing off in freedom, etc., etc. And the Israelites were not aware of the danger. Pharaoh was. So God is up there above it all. So you see, there's things that happen to you that you don't know it until it happens to you. You don't know the cancer diagnosis in you until you're given it, until you have some symptoms or something. God sees it when the first cell goes wacky. You know, it's like you don't know a car, some drunk driver is coming down the road a wrong way. You don't know that someone is going to do some terrible thing and shoot up a school. I mean, you just go to school that day. You're not thinking of this. God sees the guy loading the bullets. God saw that shooter out there in the theater. He saw him loading the bullets. He saw him buying the guns. Well, what a terrible God you serve, people say. No, because God is glorified in these things. God rescued those that are his. God did what he wanted to do. Those that knew the Lord, if they were killed, they're with him. They won. It's sad, but God also comforts those they left behind if they look to him. And God is being glorified because many people turn to God when these horrible things happen. So in our very limited carnal world, we just say, God, that's so wrong. It's so unfair. But it's not, because you've got to step way back to the God viewpoint. I just spoke at MacDill Air Force Base last night to the cadet group, and I did a little something different. I usually have a certain teaching class, but I gave them, I read a speech to them that I had given previously to another military organization, and it was about perspective. If you don't have a comparative analysis and critical thinking, your perspective is going to be skewed. Well, we don't come with that. God has to give us. He has to compare it. Listen, you guys, you don't know. In comparison to you, to me, you are weak. I am strong. You know this, you don't know, you don't understand. He's not demeaning us. He's trying to help us to understand. We can go to him to get anything we want. Now, some people misunderstand that. They think it means boats and cars and trips and fun and blah, blah, blah. No. God is talking about our spiritual lives, that when they are repaired, our physical lives will change so much for the better. Absolutely so powerful. Now, these poor little Israelites, they're dancing over there, not realizing what's going to happen. So many times, I want us to think on this, we think that God has been caught off guard or that he's not paying attention. Did you ever think that? I mean, if you're really kind of brutally honest with yourself, you'll admit that you think, gee, where were you, God? I mean, what was the first question that came out after 9/11? Where, I mean, 100 articles must have been written. Where was God on 9/11? And some of them demeaned God and came against God and said, this proves there is no God. And others said, he was right where he's always been. You just have to go to him. He was with some people on the stairway. He rescued others. Others went home to him. He has a plan. It was not devastation to God. Look what went into, look what came into being because of that. Many people turned to the Lord. Our entire security system changed. I mean, there's a bazillion things that are going on out there. God gets about a million birds with one stone. He knows what he's doing. It's a lie from the pit of hell that it's chaos and it's out of control and there is no God. Oh, what a God we serve. God does pay attention. He never leaves us or forsakes us. That plan, remember now, you got to go back, Selah. You got to meditate. You got to think about what God says. He says in Jeremiah, I think it's 29:11 or something like that, I have a plan for you, not for your calamity, but for your welfare. Well, we throw this stuff away. And the devil knows our shock comes first with what goes on, and we just forget everything. We got to be reminded. We have to remind ourselves. We have to allow others to remind us. I have a plan for you, not for your calamity, but for your welfare, to give you a future and a hope. Wow. Now, some people say, why did God run over and tell the Israelites? He speaks. They could hear him speak. Moses already heard him speak up in the mountain and all this stuff. What would that have done to the Israelites? They're already lost. They already don't know where they're going. They're already going, how are we going to get across the sea? Do we kind of go around it? They were familiar with the area. They knew what the geography was. They would have to walk around it and... That's a longer trip. Is that what we're going to do? We don't know. Can you imagine what a burden that would have been, not only to Moses, Joshua, and the leadership there, but what a burden to the people to know, now you not only know where you're going and you're here at the Red Sea, but now we got all of the hordes of Egypt coming after you on fire to kill you. That would have been too much to bear. He didn't. Of course he didn't reveal it. There's some things he's not going to reveal to us because he knows it'll be too much to bear. We'll never end up trusting him. We'll be crushed with just the thought of what's going to happen. If God had ever told me in my life some of the things that have already happened, if he told me ahead of time, I couldn't bear it. Or I would make decisions to avoid that. Which means I would not be on the road God has for me. Be very careful in our pursuit to get rid of discomfort, that we don't get on the wrong road. And in verse 4, Pharaoh says he's going to chase after them. And like I said, God said he's going to be honored, and the heathen are going to find out who he is. Now, verses 6 to 9, it goes over. I'm not going to read those out right now. About them loading up and getting all their armor and their gear and everything. And every big old fat war chariot that was ready, he sends them out. So that just, it's like it's pumped up as you read this. Oh, this situation is getting worse. This is going from bad to worse. And in verse 10 to 12, as Pharaoh drew near, guess what? The sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became confident in God. They were praising him and throwing their face down and saying, watch how God delivers us. They looked at that army coming ready to slaughter them. You know, in the movies, they all show the barbarians going, yeah, and they're charging after them. Yeah, it says they became very frightened. So the sons of Israel, now it was good. They cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we spoke to you? Didn't we say this to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. Oh, geez. Verse 10 to 12 told me a whole lot of important things. One, the people are panicking. They're not looking to the Lord. And what they're doing is their first response to the extreme circumstance was what? It was fear. It wasn't faith. I tell you, most extreme circumstances, faith is going to be in the closet. You got to go and dig it out. Whoa. If your first response is fear, don't fear that. Just say, I'm not going on that. Fear is going to weaken me. Faith is going to strengthen me. Fear is going to weaken me. Faith is going to strengthen me. I'm not talking about faith, meaning your religious belief. I'm talking about faith with the original meaning in Greek, pistuo, which means binding to the Lord. If you're bound, so if you have fear, throw it away. Get bound to the Lord. I'm hanging on to you, God. Now, when they first saw him coming, they cried out to the Lord. Now, that was good. It does say that. They cried out to the Lord. But then they didn't wait for an answer or anything. And what did they do? They turn around and they blamed Moses. Oh, we get all this mess because of you. Very important point here. Very important point. When fear is ruling, it will start twisting the actual facts of the situation. The fear was so great in them, they actually forgot. All of a sudden, Egypt wasn't so bad after all. What? This circumstance was bad. It made them forget. They were suffering. All of the things that they went through, they were slaves. They didn't own anything. They couldn't come and go. They had long days. And some of the punishment even was that they didn't even give them straw anymore. Remember that? Oh my gosh, when they were building all these things, how awful. Good grief. They didn't have the right food. They had no care. They had no right homes. There were disease and mud. And all of a sudden, this fear is ruling. I'm telling you right now, it's going to start changing the facts of the situation. Be really careful, because how you look at it is going to start changing. They said, leave us alone. It'd be better for us to serve the Egyptians than die in the wilderness. What? They were complaining that God didn't deliver them when they were in Egypt. And once he set them free, now they're saying, oh, this now is even worse than what we had before. I wish we had our less worse. Junk. He delivered you from that garbage. He delivered you from that calamity. And the word bondage is a word picture for us in terms of sin, in terms of Egypt being the world and worldliness and the things that encompass you and put chains around you. The hatred, the anger, the animosity, the dissensions, the lusts. It goes on and on and on. Those are chains to you. That is not freedom. It is for freedom that Christ came to set us free. And not free for all, not free to do what you think. That's a broken Adam nature of what you think, what you feel, and what you want. So they forgot all the pain and the shame, for crying out loud. And just, I don't want to go back to that dry desert of pain and shame. And a lot of people just, you know, say, oh, you know, well, I had my fun. I had my power. I had my ability. I could make all my own decisions. I want to go back to that. That was better for me than being here with this God that wants to control everything and tell me what to do and doesn't let me have my freedom and all that. And some people do that. It's better when I was back here. No, it isn't. That's a lie out of the pit, too. That's a dead end nothing. There is no comfort. There is no wisdom. There is no protection. Nothing. You are out on your own under the wilds. And some people, the adversary makes them rich and famous. Others, they die on the road. I don't want chance or fate running my life or your life. I want the power of the living God to be right in the forefront. Our God is so very good because he didn't give up on them and he doesn't give up on us. Now, when they so easily cast him aside and the reality of his greatness and the miraculous release that they just had, being set for, you know, free from that brutal dictator, he didn't hate them. What a message to us. He gave them so much. He did so much. And they didn't do anything but fuss and complain and actually accuse him of being a bad God. His love is greater than that. He knew that every one of them were handicapped. They were not up to the fullness of where they needed to be. And without the indwelling of God's Spirit, they couldn't. They only had law and legalism to follow, and that's where it was until Jesus came. So, and in verse 13 to 31, I'm not, again, you go ahead and read that. Take that home. Make sure you read that. Moses tried to tell them, you know, why are you crying out to me? Why are you blaming me? Call out to God for crying out loud. Stretch out your hands. And he goes through the whole thing of what happens. And God doesn't turn the people away. He actually, in verse 13 to 31, God says, now raise up your hand. And it gives all the descriptions. He actually parts the Red Sea. They walk through 600,000 people. I don't know about you. That's a lot of people going through. That was muddy. But he made it was like it says dry land. their carts didn't get stuck, their feet didn't get stuck. Some of that muck in the lake that is down the end of my road, some of that stuff you sink in up to your calves. It's gross. It's just muddy muck that sits there. Can you imagine what was on the bottom of the Red Sea and they didn't get stuck? And then on top of that, all of them get through, and then God tells Moses, okay, I'll go face it again. And he did. And by that time, all the chariots and the soldiers were in there, and it closed in on them, and none of them survived. So what he did was he rescued them not only from bondage, and the situation got worse, didn't it? They get out of one bad thing into, like, out of the pan into the fire. But in looking to the Lord, what did he do? He not only rescued them, he destroyed their enemies. And that word went around. Those guys didn't come back. The people in Egypt knew they didn't come back. They also knew they were destroyed because they went down to the Red Sea and followed their tracks. I am sure all those bodies and chariots and gear just washed up on the shore. What a God that we serve. What a God we serve. Now, don't think you have to be perfect in order to do this thing, because we have a huge example right here of imperfect people who kind of, you know, say, oh, forget you, God, after all he did. So just be really careful. So remember the takeaway for tonight. Don't get caught up in the details of your circumstances, even when they are extreme. Get caught up in the greatness of God. Then he will show you how to deal with the details and what needs to be done. Now, tonight, to end up, what I wanted to do was I want you to calmly meditate and think on these things while we play this little song here. And I'm going to keep the recorder on, so those who are listening, I want you to just settle down like we are here, look to the Lord, and just meditate on the greatness of our God and our salvation in Jesus Christ and how that manifests for us today. If you go ahead and... Meditate on these things and the greatness of God. God bless you.